Hello and welcome to episode 27 of the DX Mentor. This particular episode is all about the H40 Whiskey Alpha D-Expedition to Tumutu Province. Thank you for joining us. I'm Bill, AJ8B, the DX Mentor. Joe and I are particularly excited about this one because this is the first time we've been able to interview a D-Expedition before it headed out. The speaker you'll hear tonight has promised to get with us after he gets home and kind of compare notes and see how it went. The Intrepid DX group will be activating Tumutu Province from February 22nd to March 7th. Tumutu is number 45 on Club Log's Most Wanted DXCC list, so there's a fair chance quite a few of you don't have this one yet. Paul, N6PSE, and Rob, N7QT, are the team co-leaders. I'm thrilled to let you know that we have Paul, N6PSE, with us to tell us all about this upcoming D-Expedition. Joe, WAGEX, who's a veteran of over 60 D-Expeditions himself, will be with us. Without any further delay, let's get started. Well, hello and welcome to the latest edition of the DX Mentor podcast. I'm Bill, AJ8B, your host. And tonight we're really excited to be talking about an upcoming D-Expedition. This is a first for us. We always catch them when they're getting off the boat. Now we're going to try to catch them before they get on the boat. And Paul's going to be doing a ton of traveling the next couple of months. He'll share that with us a little bit. But to get us started, as always, let me introduce Joe, and then we'll have Paul introduce himself. So, Joe, go ahead.
Well, good evening, guys. Nice to be a part of the podcast again, Bill. I think this is, what, maybe number 25.
Yep.
But anyway, I've been a ham for 53 years. Been a DXer all my whole life. Started off in 1970 and went up through the ranks pretty much. Got my general, my advance, and then the extra. Been on quite a few D-Expeditions. Some of them were just by myself, one-man deal, and been on some where 15 and 20 operators were involved. So pretty much a DXer. And of course, we have the big DX man with us tonight. So welcome aboard, Paul.
Thank you, Joe. It's good to be with both of you tonight. Thank you.
And Paul, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into this, A, how you got into DX, and then B, how you got into all this travel and chasing and being DX.
Okay. I'm coming to you tonight from San Jose, California, where I was born and raised. I was licensed in 1982. As a Tech Plus initially, and I upgraded to Extra some years later. I started out as a VHF and UHF guy and eventually became a DXer and enjoyed HF quite a bit. And then I saw all these guys having fun traveling to exotic locations and setting up antennas on the beach and doing really great things with radio. And I said, I want to be a part of that. And I started asking around, you know, how does one get involved? How do you get invited to go on a D-Expedition? I found it kind of challenging to break into it. So I just decided to organize my own D-Expedition. That was in April 2010. We happened to be involved in a war in Iraq. And I learned from some soldiers that there was a very safe and friendly area in Iraq called Kurdistan. And here on the West Coast, you know, there were a lot of soldiers that were 100 watts in a wire from Iraq, but working for them from the West Coast was really tough, nearly impossible. So my initial goal was to help my buddies in W6 land and go there with some amplifiers and Yagi antennas and, you know, put out some big signals. And it just sort of evolved. I was very fortunate to befriend Dave Collingham, K3LP, now a Silent Key. He guided me, mentored me, became one of my dearest friends. And he was very instrumental in making YI-9 PSE very successful, D-Expedition, 54,000 QSOs. And then from there, we just became extremely close, and we went to a whole bunch of places together. And sadly, he's a Silent Key now.
Yeah, that I don't know if a DX dinner meeting at some point doesn't go by and we don't talk about Dave. He had won the grand prize at Visalian and turned around and won the grand prize like a month later at our dinner. And it was
I wanted to follow him around hoping he'd play the lottery, but what you're right. What a great guy. And you
know what he did with those grand prizes? He immediately gave those away to kids that needed those rigs. He didn't keep anything for himself. Yes. He always paid it forward.
That's terrific. I was fortunate enough to meet him, and even in like one or two meetings, all of a sudden it's kind of like, well, if you guys are willing to do this, we could ship these PCs over to Africa and they could use them at this one town I know. It was like he just always had those ideas. So, he's missed, and I'm glad that you're carrying on, and we all appreciate everything you do. I do remember my first encounter with you was you had a blog that I enjoyed the heck out of, and I had commented on it several times, and then you stopped, and I think there were a few people that didn't necessarily agree with your view maybe. You got tired of hearing about it, and so I personally was sorry for that because I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a passion of mine. All the time I think about resuming it, but I remember, when you put your thoughts and sort of your heart and soul out there on the internet, there's always a very small but vocal crowd that just really sort of, goes after you. They're kind of like the dogs used to chase me when I was a paper boy, always trying to bite me. And it just, it's just sort of like, I really don't need that.
Yeah, no, I hear you. What are some of the expeditions? You're obviously a very experienced expeditioner. What are some of the ones you went on that came to mind? Would come to mind if somebody says, what was your best or most favorite? Or
well, my most favorite was probably my worst, but in 2016, Dave Cullingham and I brought a team of 13 men, and we went to South Sandwich in South Georgia, VP8 STI and VP8 SGI. That was a really tough de-expedition. It tested us physically, it tested us emotionally. We all found our limits. We were cold. We were hungry. I would argue that activating South Sandwich is right up there with activating Bouvet. It was really, really a very tough place. And if it wasn't for the hardy crew of the Braveheart, who got us there and took good care of us while we were there, we probably wouldn't have been so successful. But that was probably the most difficult de-expedition, but my favorite for a lot of ways, and it was the last one that I was able to do with K3LP.
I believe that's the one that Jay, K4Z Ali, was on.
That's right, yep.
And he's a member of our club, and I can remember him telling us about a particular night where the tent, it was everything they could do to hold the tent down to keep you guys from literally being blown off the glacier.
That's a night I'll never forget. The wind was just howling, and nobody got any sleep that night. We literally were standing with our backs to the tent, just holding it in place. We were afraid that the wind was just going to lift it and send it sailing off into the ocean, and then we would have been extremely vulnerable to the elements. We spent a lot of time securing that tent and just tying it down more and more and more and more. That was a scary night. That really affected me.
Yeah.
So Paul, did Jay or one of your crew members fall in the water on that trip? Or am I thinking of something else?
No, we had a generator that got, it was coming off the small boat, and a wave went over the generator. Everybody jumped in and grabbed it. We all got a little bit wet, but it wasn't too bad. But no, nobody fell in the water.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like to bring stuff like that up, not to kind of, raise bad memories but there's so many of us, I've not done anything like that. So for me, if I get you in the log, I'm excited. And then I go listen for the next one. And if I don't, I get frustrated and I go listen for the next one. And we don't think about the fact that there's 3 weeks in getting there. There's 3 weeks in after, you're tearing it down. You're taking care of all this stuff that's been loaned to you that you're responsible for. And a lot of times you're putting your life at risk. So that's a message I like. I want listeners and viewers to kind of take away that these aren't just you hop in a boat and you go work somewhere. There's a lot involved.
Yeah, and as a leader organizer, we do a lot of risk mitigation. We look at all of the risks. We constantly assess and reassess the risk, and we do everything we can to minimize the risk. Because, you know, the goal is to do a safe and productive de-expedition, to have everybody come home. Hopefully, everybody will have had a good time. Hopefully, our audience, the DX community, will be satisfied with our effort. But yeah, we try to minimize risk as much as we can. That's a primary goal for us.
Well, one of the things that's also come up in one of our podcasts was how important it is to have a doctor on the trip. And
Absolutely,
Joe.
especially when you're, you know, days away from civilization, and you know, somebody could have something like a appendicitis attack that, you know, could be devastating if you're 7 or 8 days away from civilization, and you know, it's that long of a boat ride to get back. So it's very, very important to have a physician on the team. And I really think that any organizer that doesn't include a physician on their team, and they're going to a very remote place, I think they're remiss. I think they're negligent. They really need to
Yes.
dig deeper and work harder. There are physicians that are willing and able and want to go.
So you
Are
who's your physician on Clipperton, Paul?
That's Arliss Thompson, W7XU, who was also with us for South Sandwich, South Georgia. Great guy, a retired ER physician, and a wonderful amateur and a wonderful human being.
So I know you're not the leader of Clipperton, but you are going. So can you just tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we've got a huge team. We'll be departing San Diego. I think it's January 10th on the Shogun. And I think it's about a 6, 7 day voyage to Clipperton. We'll be setting up, and boy, the plans are huge. We have they're doing EME, 6 meters, you know, everything down to 160 meters. Really good equipment, really good planning, very good organization, and it should be really, really effective. That a lot of people should be able to get contacts with Clipperton. We hope, you know, see everybody in our logs.
Wow,
It's a
it's
big,
almost
big effort.
the way you guys are doing these nowadays. It's like if I can't get you in the log, I'm not trying.
Yeah, you know, the wants and desires of the DX community has changed. I remember when I was first a DXer, I was satisfied to just get one contact. When Peter One Island was on, you know, so many years ago, I have one SSB contact, and I thought that was great. You know, now I'm retired, and I chase de-expeditions on every band and mode that I can, and it's a lot of fun. It's very challenging. You know, I've come around to really covet, you know, 160 and 80 meter CUSOs. They're hard. That's very challenging. You know, people say, why do you do it? It's because it's really hard, but it's fun.
And I'm really I don't miss the not in log days. You know, I mean,
No,
oh,
no.
and you either had to do insurance contacts, which were never guaranteed, or you just rolled
Yeah.
the dice. And oh, what a
Yeah.
devastating letter that is to
Things
get back.
are better now in a lot of ways. I love Club Log. I love those daily uploads. I'm not a huge fan of the live streaming. I think that's counterproductive because of the internet connections falter, and then people think they've got a dupe because they don't see their call flash up. But I like the daily, once a day Club Log upload. I think that's really great.
Sure.
And you know, Starlink has enabled that to be a lot more easier and reliable. So I think that's a really great thing.
And now let's have a word from ICOM.
Hey, Bill, did you know that this winter you can make your gatherings merrier, your messages clearer, and your connections stronger with ICOM? Whether inside the ham shack or on the air in the great outdoors, they have the radio that every ham wants. From high-powered base stations and mobiles to compact, travel-friendly handhelds and portables, their radios offer features and functions such as spectrum scope and waterfall displays, D-Star, sideband, CW, RTTY, AM/FM modes, and more. For the D-Star fans, ICOM's ID5100AD, ID50A, and ID52A are the perfect traveling companions. Bill, why don't you tell us a little bit about the ID5100AD?
Sure, Karen. The ID5100AD is innovation and mobility taken to the next level. Designed from user input, the ID5100AD offers an intuitive user interface experience with an industry-leading touchscreen display. This radio is one of the most advanced dual-band mobiles on the market today. It features intuitive touchscreen operation, integrated GPS receiver, DV-DV dual watch, DV-FM repeaterless operation, and you can even get an optional VS3 Bluetooth headset.
Wow, that's pretty impressive. What about the ID52A?
Well, the ID52A is a VHF-UHF dual bander with D-Star and FM dual mode functions, and it's the first handheld amateur radio with full-color 2.3-inch waterfall display. This radio supports conventional FM communications and D-Star simplex, repeater, regional, and worldwide calls over the D-Star internet gateway. Along with all that, you get wideband receiver with a guaranteed range of 144 to 148 megahertz and 440 to 450 megahertz, VV, UU, VU, and dual DV mode, integrated GPS GLONASS receiver, including grid square location, and micro USB for data transfer, programming, and charging. The ID52A is a perfect companion to the IC705. Both use compatible batteries and headsets, and you can also use the same Android app for D-Star operation.
Well, that sounds like a pretty good deal, but I was also wondering about the ID50A.
Well, the ID50A gives hours of fun and enjoyment working your favorite bands. Beginners will love these features: easy D-Star settings, band scope with waterfall display, voice messaging, share picture function, and it uses the same optional accessories as the ID52A, the ID51A, and the ID31A.
Very interesting. I was also taking a peek at the IC905.
Well, the 905 is specifically detailed for the outdoor ham who loves POTA and SOTA activations. You can explore the world of microwave with ICOM's new SHF portable, the IC905. This all-mode rig covers 2 meters, 70 centimeters, 1.2 gig, 2.4 gig, 5.6 gig bands, and with the optional CX10G transverter, you can even cover 10 gigahertz. All of this comes with a large 4.3-inch touchscreen color display, real-time high-speed spectrum scope and waterfall display, easy digital mode settings, high-performance GPS antenna which is supplied, and full D-Star functionality in DV-DD mode. You can aim higher by entering the world of SHF with the IC905.
Well, I also noticed that the IC7300 is one of the top choices. Maybe you better fill me in a little bit more about that option.
Well, the IC7300 is the rig I told you. I don't think a day goes by and I haven't worked somebody that's using an IC7300. It's the high-performance, innovative HF transceiver with a compact design that will far exceed expectations. This is an innovative HF transceiver that digitizes RF before various receiver stages, reducing the generated inherent noise in different IF stages. This is the radio that changed the way entry-level HF is designed, and that was because of several things: a large 4.3-inch touchscreen color display, real-time spectrum scope, and 15 discrete bandpass filters. The real HF fun starts here with the IC7300.
Well, and I took a peek and saw, for the mobile and outdoors enthusiasts, the IC7100 seems to be ready for the road.
You know, it is. And for the mobile and outdoor aficionado, the IC7100 is road ready. Communicate with the touch of a finger. This compact base station is an ideal D-Star option to keep you connected anywhere. It features angled control head and touchscreen for quick, intuitive operation, large internal speaker for clear digital audio, one-touch selection, and it covers the HF, 50 megahertz, 144, 430, and 440 megahertz multibands on all modes. And I can tell you, after earning my mobile DXCC, all of these features are huge.
Well, if anybody is interested in more details, please check the show notes for links to your favorite products. Either at home or wherever you roam, Happy New Year from ICOM.
For the love of ham radio.
Very good. So after Clipperton, you're coming home for a long time for rest and relaxation. And then where are you going?
I'm coming home and I'm for about a week, and then I'm heading off to the Solomon Islands, and we'll be in the capital of Solomon's, Honiara, for about 5 days, waiting for our once a week flight to Lom Lom in Tomotu Province. And then we're going to take a small boat to a small island called Pigeon Island, and we'll operate there for 2 weeks as H40WA.
Okay.
And Tomotu's the number 43 most wanted entity. So
Wow. Now, how many folks are going to be on that?
we've got eight people. That's the limit that the aircraft, there's a small aircraft that flies from Honiara to Lom Lom, and they can only take eight people. So that's the limit of our team. And it's only once a week flight. So it's going to be a small team, but we're going to hit it hard. We've got big plans, a lot of gear. We shipped thousands of pounds of equipment. And it's there waiting for us. So we're excited and we're ready to go.
So as the team leader, can you give us a glimpse of that? Just sounds daunting to me. You got to put all these stations together, you got to get food and fuel. How do you even start that?
Well, it has been challenging. But first you assemble your team, and you always sort of have a bench of people that are interested and available and willing to go. And you scale, you have to know your limits. So you scale your plan. So we're going to have four stations, one of which will primarily be a reserve, and we'll do some 6 meter work with that one. But we'll have three stations active around the clock with eight guys. They're going to be very, very busy. It's not going to be a lot of time on the beach, but eight guys can keep three stations active around the clock in pretty good fashion. Now, if we had the luxury of 14, 15, 18 guys, we could have more stations, obviously, but it just wouldn't make sense to bring more than four stations for such a small team. But
So,
we'll pay close attention to our pilots, who will be communicating to us over a satellite messenger device, the Garmin inReach, about the needs and where we're hitting and where we need to be, and we'll be in constant contact with them. So we hope to satisfy the greater good out there. We hope to make everybody happy.
do you stage your equipment ahead? I'm surely you don't just show up and say, "Oh yeah." So you must stage this ahead of time, then you repack it and
Yeah, back in July, we completed acquiring all of our gear, and we had quite a bit of gear here in storage. But we get everything out, refurbish it, test it, make sure it's good. We pack it. In July, we worked with a logistics company here in the Bay Area to ship it to the Solomon Islands, and from there, it's been moved around on various smaller ships and ferry boats to get to Tomotu. So everything was packed and shipped and tested, and it's there waiting for us. So we have a very small amount of gear that we need to bring with us. Things like an extra laptop, antenna analyzer, that kind of thing. But most of it's there waiting, so we're in good shape.
Wow.
So, Paul, how many people live on the island, if any?
On Pigeon Island, where we're going, it's just a very, very small family, sort of a caretaker family.
Okay.
It has a small guest house on the island. And we've arranged for generators to be brought in and drums of fuel. And it's just going to be us.
Wow.
So we hope that that helps with the noise situation. We hope that we
Yes.
have low noise because there's really isn't anybody close by.
Well, so Joe, would you mind sharing your barrel connector story? Because when I think about logistics and what you guys and what Joe's been through, what you've been through multiple times, this story always resonates with me because this would be me. I'm telling you right now, this would be me.
So I'm like you, Paul. I'm very good about details. So we was on we were going to Midway, and of course we had all the radios and all the cables and everything. And we get on Midway, and we're running all the cables. We had a mile of cable, and I'm sure you guys are taking probably about the same amount. And usually we're at least 200 or 300 feet from from the water line. So we start putting cables together, and we had no barrel connectors, not a one. So as luck would have it, Charlie, I'm bringing the NF4A and Bruce Butler had to stay back in Honolulu because our plane was full and they was bringing the next flight in the next morning. So we called those guys and told them while they're in Honolulu, rent a taxi and go to every Radio Shack in Honolulu and buy every barrel connector that they could get. So by God, those two guys did that. We met them at the airport on the Midway, and they had all these barrel connectors. But without those guys being there, I guess we would have just cut that coax and tied the ends together. What else would you do? So that I was thinking about that as well, Bill, when you was talking about logistics and planning of all this, and you cannot be too sharp on that. You really gotta get down to the pencil and think, what have we got? Have we missed anything? Because that thing that you're missing might be just the important thing that you need.
Yeah, we've learned the hard way that Murphy always comes with us. It whatever can go wrong will go wrong. We have to plan for every contingency. We have multiple checklists, and we have to check things two, three, four times. And inevitably, there's always something we kind of wish we had. You cannot have enough black tape. Just black tape and tie wraps. You cannot have too much of that.
No.
So what made you choose Tuamotu? I mean, there's a number of places I suppose you could have gone. Was there anything in specific, or was it, hey, this is a cool not a cool place, but it meets a lot of our goals and objectives, so let's go there.
We have spent an awful lot of time and effort trying to get permission for all of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife possessions in the South Pacific. We've had numerous discussions with them. We've submitted supplemental use permits for everything out there, and we're just getting nowhere. And no ray of hope, really. I don't believe that permission will ever be given for Johnston Island, for example. Kiri, no, not going to happen. The others, maybe, but we're kind of tired of staying home. And Tuamotu is one of the easier islands that you can get permission for. It's maybe not as rare as some of the ones that we'd really like to activate, but those rare ones are rare for a reason. They just don't want us there. So we could stay home and keep focusing on the super tough ones, or we can go out and have some fun on a semi-rare one, and that's the case with Tuamotu.
So,
What kind?
Paul, talking about that, the rig in a box, do you think that's going to be beneficial for those fish and wildlife locations?
First of all, I want to say that I think the rig in a box is very, very cool. It's neat technology. George Wallner has done a masterful job in assembling all that technology and putting it in a box. That said, I'm skeptical that will help. And the reason why is when I talk to fish and wildlife people, they tell me that their primary concerns are bird strikes with antennas, people peeing and pooping on the island, storage and handling of fuel on the island, and people camping on the island. Well, the rib in a box or the radio in a box mitigates camping on the island. You can tell people not to pee and poop on the island, but if they got to, they're probably going to. So you can't guarantee that's not going to happen. The bird strikes, the rib doesn't do a thing to help you with bird strikes. And then I see the vehicle that George has created, where he can just motor it from the magnet and drive it right up on the beach. And I gotta think that Fish and Wildlife would lose their mind if they saw that, because they're concerned with the turtle eggs that are just inches under the surface of the sand, and they don't want any kind of vehicle or anything of significant weight that's going to crush those turtle eggs. So I think it remains to be seen if the rib concept is going to help or not. I think, it's not my decision.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah. Wow. I hadn't thought about it from that standpoint. It seemed to me like a good fit, but I hadn't, didn't
Yeah.
think about those details. So
I never thought about the turtles.
I didn't either.
No.
Yeah, because you've dealt with bird strikes before, right, Joe, with all the ties that you put on the wires and.
When we went to Midway, guys, excuse me, we had to all the verticals, we had to put ribbons probably every foot. And in our QSL card, it made a beautiful picture of the big 80 and 160 verticals and all these flags on them. But it took a lot of time to put those up and take them down. And of course, obviously, you had to clean the mess up and the tape. And so, yeah, that's interesting. But I never thought about those turtles.
Let's take a break to learn about the Daily DX.
Hey, I just poured you a cup of coffee. You look pretty happy. How'd you do?
I worked him on the third call. Can you believe it?
You worked him on the third call? Seriously? I thought you just had that little pistol station.
I do, but I have a secret weapon.
A secret weapon? What is it?
Information. I knew when they were on the air, their operating habits. Heck, I even knew the equipment they're using. I just had to be there when they came up on the band. I even beat the spotting network.
Wow, how'd you manage all that?
I get the Daily DX from Bernie, W3UR. In addition to the weekly and daily bulletins, I also receive special notices when things change in real time. I feel that I'm always on top of every de-expedition.
So now you just need to confirm it, right?
Yep, that's it. Bernie even helps me with that, giving me QSL routes and QSL managers if they don't use LOTW. The Daily DX is a DX bulletin sent via email to you Monday through Friday. It includes DX news, IOTA news, QSN reports, QSL information, a DX calendar, propagation forecast, and much, much more. With a subscription to the Daily DX, you will also receive DX news flashes and other interesting DX tidbits. Bernie's been an integral part of my confirming over 300 entities and WAZ while operating a modest station.
W3UR Bernie is the editor, a member of the DX Honor Roll, a member of the 3000 Challenge Club, as well as the editor of the How's DX column in QST. He is uniquely positioned to have his finger on the pulse of the DX community and shares this information weekly. Why not let Bernie be your secret weapon?
You can get a free 2-week trial at www.dailydx.com.
Now let's go have that cup of coffee and tune around.
So, do you have goals for this? I think goals are a dangerous thing because you set expectations for the ham community, and it sounds like you're incredibly well prepared and staffed and everything, but you still don't know what's going to happen. I mean, so if you announce that you're going to do 200,000 and everybody's excited and some reason you do 80, I mean, 80 would be a tremendous, but you see what I'm saying? You want to be careful about setting expectations, but I'm sure you also have some goals where you're going to sit back and say, you know what? We did it well. We did it right.
Yeah, I've learned never to say we're going to make X number of QSOs because you just really don't know. You don't know what you don't know. Our goals are to, satisfy everybody, to satisfy the greater good. Temodu contacts are very coveted in Europe, and the East Coast definitely is going to want those low band contacts. We aim to please. But I sort of feel that it's safe to sort of under promise and over deliver. When we went to South Sandwich in South Georgia, I mean, the conditions there were brutal, just the winds, just everything, and we were only permitted to be on each island for 8 days. We wanted to be there longer, but the government that issued the landing permits said, the mean time between storms there is 7 or 8 days, and we knew we got walloped in each de-expedition. Basically, as we were kind of getting close to the end, we got walloped with storms that basically shut us down. So, under promise and over deliver has worked for us. So, we made 135,000 CUSOs between South Sandwich and South Georgia. So, we over delivered there. Nobody expected us to make that many. And I'll be happy if we can, make quite a few from Tomotu.
Well,
That's
you
our
know
goal.
what? So we'll get together when you get back, and then you can sit back and have a cigar and say it was great, and here's all the
I
reasons
hope so. Yeah. That would be
So,
nice.
if I've got we've got some young DXers, and I've gotten emails from them, and they're in the there's a couple I'm thinking of right now. They're in that 60 to 70 confirmed, and they're aggressively moving up. What are they going to have, and what coaching would you give them to make sure that they get you in the log?
I think a lot of DXers need to really examine sort of their mindset, because after every de-expedition, I get emails from people saying, "I heard you, but you didn't work me." Or I never heard you, and all I can say is, we brought a KW and a gain antenna. And I want to tell these guys out there with 100 watts and a wire, hey, we love you, but if it's coming down to the end and you're not in a log, go visit a friend or, your Elmer, what have you. Do what you got to do to get in the log, because it's getting more difficult and more expensive to make these activations. And who knows what it will be like 10, 12, 15 years from now. And so I tell people, by hook or crook, do what you can to get in the log. And if you have to go visit your buddy's contest station or what have you, go do it. There's no shame in that.
Yeah, and you got to be
Sure.
the chair. I mean, you can't
Yeah.
just throw the
Yeah.
radio on and you guys are going to
Right.
appear.
Yeah, exactly.
I've had
Exactly.
guys come to my house, Paul, that their antennas were down or something was broke. And they needed to work this D expedition, and they called me up and said, "Hey, can we come over?" Well, sure.
Yep.
And
More guys should do
they're far
exactly
away.
that.
Yeah.
Share your station. I do the same thing. I had five or six guys come over to my place to work Crozet, and about as many to come and work Bouvet. And from Whiskey Six Land, that was really, really tough.
Yeah. And Jay, that he was one of them. His
Good.
antenna was down, and he called, and I said, "Well, sure, buddy, come on over. It's all
Yeah,
yours."
there's no shame in doing that. I tell guys, do what you can to get in that log.
Yep.
And if you have to visit a buddy or an Elmer, do it.
Yeah, good
Yeah.
advice.
Yeah, it is good advice. So, from a fundraising standpoint, which is something that everybody just, I think, glosses over, but these are not cheap. So what can the folks listening, how can they help?
Yeah, so we're fundraising for the H40WAD expedition. We've got the club log PayPal link on our website. And we're encouraging any donors of $10 or more, if you donate before the D expedition starts, you don't need to use the online QRS system to get your contacts confirmed. We will automatically upload to Logbook of the World, and we will automatically send your QSL cards to you. So it's very, very convenient. We hope that
Wow.
the convenience sake helps people donate up front. I'll share with you that the climate right now, I talked to several other de-expedition leaders that are fundraising right now. Since 3Y0J, DXers are more reluctant to donate up front. And they will tell us, I'm going to wait and donate when I see I'm in the log. Understandable.
Yeah.
So the climate now is not the way it was 2021, 2022. It's much different now. But we tell guys, a very small donation, $10, and we want you to have fun chasing us. Isn't that fun worth, $10? And again, we're going to use our postage We're going to have our cards printed and we'll send it to you. We'll do logbook, everything, $10. It's, you know. And I often feel like, you know, there's a significant group of guys that are very generous. If you look at all the donors on every de-expedition website, you see the same names. There's guys that donate 100 or 500 for every de-expedition. And then there's a lot of guys that sit back and donate nothing. You know, they wait for their bureau card. You know, they wait that for that year period where they get the logbook of the world upload for free. I always say, you know, if everybody donated $10 to every de-expedition, maybe more for the Bouvets and the Crozets and the really expensive ones, but if everybody donated $10, you would have so much DX, just like we've had in the last 6 months. It's been really amazing. It's really, this was a great year for de-expeditions. And that can continue, you know, if everybody helps out just a small amount, nothing significant, but just a small amount, and there'll be a lot more de-expeditions happening. I believe that.
You know, that's a heck of a deal, because by the time I put a card in an envelope, $2 postage or $4 green stamps or something, I mean, so basically I'm only doubling that, right? To make a donation to help you guys out. So that's terrific.
And it's automatic. It's guaranteed. If you get in the log, it's gonna happen. It's not like you have to remember to go back and you know, upload your log to Club Log or what have you, and follow up and do it. It's just a no-brainer. All you have to do is get in the log.
That's a great. Go ahead, Joe.
So, Paul, what's your website for our listeners so that they know where to donate?
It is HTTP colon slash slash intrepid dash dx dot com slash H40WA.
And I will put that in the show notes, so
Thank you.
if somebody's driving and
Yeah.
wow, that's really, that's a deal.
So, Paul, what kind of antennas are you going to have?
We've got some really dynamite vertical dipole arrays that my co-leader Rob N7QT and some of his friends have assembled. Those will be right at the water's edge on the beach. We've also got a hex beam as sort of a backup directional antenna. We've got spider beam poles for 30, 40, 60, 80, and 160. And we've got a four element 6 meter beam
Okay.
for 6 meters.
Sure. What about 60 meters?
Yeah, so we've got a spider beam pole. We're bringing one of those DX Commander antennas that's sort of a supplemental antenna. It's going to have 60 and 80 meters on it as well.
Okay. Because Rob would tell you that I'm a big 60 meter guy.
Yeah, I heard that. Well, we aim to please.
That's good.
Thank you.
So you mentioned that in the URL that you gave, it was the Intrepid DX Group. And
Yes.
I've heard that term, but I can't say I know a whole lot about it. And I got to tell you, for all the stuff y'all doing, I want to learn more about it. So what can you tell us?
Okay, so back in 2010, we took a group and we went to Iraq and made 54,000 QSOs from there. And there was a war going on at the time, and a lot of craziness going on in Iraq. And people called us those Intrepid DXers, and the name kind of stuck. Then in 2011, we went to South Sudan and did ST0R as they were becoming a new country. And people continued to call us the, you know, those Intrepid DXers, and the name just kind of stuck. We had to sort of formalize our group because I made the mistake of using my PayPal account for the first few de-expeditions, and I ended up having to pay taxes on those donations, which was no fun at all. So we became a corporation, and we now have 501c3 nonprofit status. So all of our donations are tax exempt. And we have a board of directors. And so we have two missions. One, we want to promote amateur radio in developing nations. And we've done that in places like Iraq, where we make presentations. We've gone to Ethiopia and operated from there and made presentations at the Addis Ababa Technology University. We've gone to Rotuma Island and made presentations and trained kids on operating there at the high school, Rotuma Island. We also want to activate rare and remote places, and we do that when we can, how we can. And then we also want to promote youth activity in the hobby. And we just finished our fourth annual Youth Dream Rig Essay Contest. And we buy radios. ICOM 7300 is the dream rig, and we open this essay contest each year to kids in the U.S. and Canada. This year we received 30 very, very nice essays, and we had three different radios as prizes. And so we've just completed that. And if anyone wants to look at our Intrepid DX group Facebook page, you can see the winning essays, and you can see the kids there with their gleaming radios and their big smiles on their face. And it's very, very rewarding for us. And we also like to tap into the creativity of these young kids and find out what appeals to them about the hobby. And interestingly, a lot of what appealed to the hobby for us, you know, 40, 50 years ago, still appeals to them today. These kids are brimming with great ideas and enthusiasm, and they're not all stuck looking at their phone or their web browser, whatever. They're thinkers, they're doers. And, one of the kids that won second place this year is a pre-med student. They're all going places. They're all really bright, enthusiastic kids. And it's just delightful to read their essays. So I've been posting the winning essays on our Facebook page if anybody wants to take a look.
Yeah, that'd be great. I'll put that link out there as well. Jay had mentioned the Youth Dream Rig Essay Contest. Wanted to make sure I brought it up. So
yeah,
that's really neat. And that's an annual thing now.
That's an annual thing, and we hope to keep it going for many years to come. It's we enjoy doing it, and at some point we hope we can maybe get a sponsor to help us with the cost of the rigs, and we'll just see where it goes.
How do you make the announcement? Is it posted on Facebook, or is it a dinner, or?
We make a news announcement. We post it in a lot of youth forums on Facebook. Carol Perry at the ARRL helps us also. Ray Storms or Jim Storms.
Yeah.
And some of his friends help publicize it. They've got a pretty big youth group. We do the youth on the air, YOTA. We contact them. Neil Rapp helps publicize it. So a lot of different folks have quite a list of people we reach out to. Bernie W3UR helps us with that. So we get the word out, and then we open up the essay submission period, and we were delighted to get 30 very well done essays this year.
That's great. That's terrific. When you get back and your feet are up, you know, there's the classic question, where do you go next?
Well, we're working on a lot of things. We're still trying to activate some stuff in the South Pacific. Again, very rare, very challenging. I'd love to take a team back to Iraq. It's been 13 years since I was there. I plan to go back to Iraq this year. I was in Syria in August and had some meaningful talks there. Would love to bring a team to Syria. It's very, very, very challenging there for a number of reasons, but it might happen. That would be a sort of a multinational group, not so much an American effort, but a multinational group.
Wow.
And the we'll see what happens.
Do I have your name associated with Korea at some time? Were you almost going to go, or
That was going to be my question.
I've made several visits to North Korea in 2015, and at one point we had permission and we were assembling a team and we shipped a mountain of gear to Beijing that we would bring into North Korea. And wouldn't you know it, the last minute things unraveled and complications arose that we just really, it's going back to mitigating risk. We were faced with unplanned risks at the last moment. It was the hardest decision I ever made, in conjunction with Dave Collingham, to say things are going south, really fast. We need to, we need to pull back on this and hit the brakes. And
Wow.
it was very, very, very difficult. But again, we mitigate risk, and we were just faced with some enormous risks at the very last moment that weren't very attractive.
And
So, Paul, do you think that P5 will ever be on air?
I do. I think certain nationalities, maybe the Chinese or the Russians, probably have an advantage to doing it there. But we know from our experience dealing with the North Koreans that their methods of negotiating are, well, let's just say unique. I'll leave it at that.
Okay.
Interesting.
Because
Well,
we're all, I'm one of the lucky ones. I've got it, but I always wonder, will it ever, get back on the air? So.
I think it will, but I'll add that the North Koreans know the value of permission there. They know, and they intend to assess as much as they can with that permission.
Sure.
Wow. Well, I'll make you this offer. I'm 6'9" and about 340. So if I can be your bodyguard when you go, call me.
It's interesting. It was actually in my two visits there, they were very friendly, very cordial. They were nice people. They have to follow a very narrow script, or sort of
Sure.
country line, but we had some great meals with the North Koreans. We drank beer together. We played volleyball. We had a really great time. They, as Americans, they don't project any animus towards us at all. They can be very, very friendly and very, very nice. But when you're negotiating with them as Americans, you're at a severe disadvantage just from the get-go. And I think the Chinese or the Russians would have a real advantage there, and I hope that they exploit that advantage. I'd like to see it activated.
Yes.
And then your trips to the Middle East, you found that to be beneficial, at least, and nice folk, kind of the same feeling you had. And
I've been to almost every country in the Middle East, and always treated very well over there. We also went to Iran in 2015, and we had some talks and meetings with the government there. And we learned that they were basically going to sort of auction permission to the highest bidder. We learned that a European group was also interested in activating Iran. And we actually talked to them on the phone from Iran. And they were so honest and so forthright and so decent. And we basically said, it really makes sense for you guys to activate this. You're a lot closer. You can bring your gear in and out much easier. To bring stuff from W6 land to Iran is very, very
Yeah,
expensive.
can't
We've done
imagine.
that before going to Iraq. We know.
Yeah.
So we chose ultimately to wish them good luck and not bid against them on that permission. And they made a very, very successful activation of Iran. I worked them from home, and everybody was happy.
Yeah.
Partnerships can be really, really beneficial. When we did ST0R in 2011, we partnered with a group called the Tifariti Gang or dxfriends.com. Tony EA5RM and his group. And we had just a wonderful experience, 3 weeks operating from Juba, South Sudan with the Tifariti Gang. And just what a positive experience and friendships that last to this day. It was, partnerships can really make or break a DX expedition.
Let's pause for a minute to hear from one of our great sponsors. You know, I've been talking about DX engineering for quite a while, and I thought it would be better to have someone who is an avid user and appreciates all that DX engineering does and Tim Duffy does for the ham community. So here's Paul, N6PSE, as he's preparing for his H40 Whiskey Alpha D-Expedition.
You know, there's some really terrific organizations and companies out there that sponsor our D-Expeditions that really, really bolster our abilities and really add to that success factor. Tim Duffy and the great folks at DX Engineering are second to none. Just amazing people. And when we contact them, they are very generous and really help us a lot.
Thanks, Paul, for your honest reflection on DX Engineering and how they affect the ham community. And good luck on your upcoming H40 Whiskey Alpha DX expedition.
It gives you a sense of what a tight community we are, whether we realize it or not, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So what are the dates then for the Timotu? I don't even say it correctly, I don't think, but what are the dates for that?
We're going to be on the air late in the day on February 22nd of 2024, and then we'll shut down probably late in the evening, March 6th. On March 7th, we have to fly from Lom Lom back to Honiara. But so those are the dates, and we've got them on our website.
Right. Yeah, I want to make sure I get all this information out well before then. So I'd like to follow back up with the Intrepid group, though. Is that an open group? Anybody that myself or anybody listening can join that group? Is there a join or?
We don't have members per se. I have a list of people on our website that have gone with us on various D expeditions. And that's sort of my bench that I go to when we're forming a team, as I go to many of those. But on the other side, we always welcome newcomers and first timers on every one of our teams. We've always had a first timer on the Timotu team. We have a first timer. In fact, our physician, Bruce, K3NQ, is so excited to go. He's just brimming with excitement. He's a snorkeler and a diver like me, and we're just super excited to go to Timotu. You know, the first timers that we've had have always exceeded our expectations. They've always worked out really, really well. A lot of them become very serious de-expeditioners. Arliss Thompson, for example, W7XU, South Georgia and South Sandwich, was his first de-expedition, and now he's gone to all sorts of places, and he's very busy. He's got a full dance card with the expeditions. He's very much in demand.
And he did the hard ones first.
Boy, yes, he did. Yeah. He really did.
Yeah.
Holy moly. So, Joe, what have I forgotten?
Well, I don't know. I went down through my list and I made some notes while Paul was talking, and we've covered all of them. So I don't have anything to add, Bill.
Okay. Well, Paul, I really appreciate you taking time, and my goodness, looking at your schedule coming up, and we hope to see you at Dayton, of course. And
I'll try to make it. That's my plan.
We'll compare notes there. And anything else you'd like to add, or either about what we've talked about, or something that has slipped my mind?
In closing, I would just like to say that there's some really terrific organizations and companies out there that sponsor our D expeditions that really, really bolster our abilities and really add to that success factor. Tim Duffy and the great folks at DX Engineering are second to none. Just amazing people. And when we contact them, they are very generous and really help us a lot. some of the manufacturers out there too, great people. They want to see us be successful. Over the years, we've benefited a lot. And then, of course, the foundations and the many DX clubs across the country. You know, we're only successful because they add to our mission. You know, they put the wind in our sails, and we're very, very grateful for all of them.
Yeah, they're really critical to the whole process, that's for sure.
Very much so.
Well, we'll get the word out, and if there's anything we can do, Joe and I, let me know. And of course, we got Jay close by here, so we can. I can not quite see him from here; he's a few miles away. But we'll keep tabs on you guys, and you know. And I'd like to right now invite you back when you get home and things are settled and your bags are unpacked but not quite packed yet, and we
I'll
can
be
do a
glad to.
recap. Yeah, we'll do a recap. So.
Let's take a break to learn about a program that could reward those of you that have been helping young hams move up the DX ladder.
The Southwest Ohio DX Association, SWODEXA, in conjunction with ICOM America, Inc., is announcing a program to recognize and reward amateur radio operators who have played a key role in helping other amateur radio operators achieve DXCC. The purpose of this program is not to bring recognition to those that achieved DXCC, but rather to recognize those amateurs that assist others in achieving their first 100 confirmed entities. There is an application form and a judging committee staffed by SWODEXA representatives and a representative from both the Northern California DX Foundation and the International DX Association. Those amateurs receiving the help must be under 30 years of age during the calendar year for the award. The intent of targeting this audience is to attract and retain those amateurs that are most likely to remain engaged in the hobby after achieving DXCC. SWODEXA is uniquely positioned to bestow this award at the annual SWODEXA DX Dinner. The DX Dinner, held annually in conjunction with the Dayton Hamvention, is arguably the largest gathering of active DXers in the world. We present the DXpedition of the Year Award, the DXpeditioner of the Year Award when applicable, and host the DX Forum. CQ Magazine announces their CQ DX Hall of Fame inductees at the DX Dinner as well. As a technology leader in our hobby, there is no better partner to promote and celebrate this award than ICOM. Ray, N9JA, has been a constant promoter of ham radio, even coining the phrase, "for the love of ham radio." ICOM has selflessly supported amateur radio over the years and is taking this opportunity to promote the mentors of DX. Thanks to ICOM for their support. More information and the entry form can be found at www.swodexa.org/dx-mentor-program by emailing thedxmentor@gmail.com.
Paul, thank you very much. God bless. And, well, you know, we'll pray for a safe trip and good DX. So you can't wish for a whole lot more than that.
We'll see
thank
you in
you,
the
Bill.
pileups.
Joe?
We'll see you in the pileups.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I hope. Thanks,
Great.
sir.
Thank you, guys. Have a good evening.
You
yeah,
too.
thank you.
Okay.
Safe
Bye-bye.
travels. Bye-bye.
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 Was that cool or what? Thank you for joining us on this edition of the DX Mentor Podcast. I would like to thank our sponsors, ICOM America, The Daily DX, DX Engineering, and the Southwest Ohio DX Association. You won't find anyone more committed to DX than these sponsors. I would especially like to thank our gurus on this podcast, Paul, N6PSE, and Joe, W8GEX. I would love to have your feedback, answer your questions, and provide help with any DX or amateur radio issues that you may have. If you need clarification on something or you just have a question, email me at thedxmentor@gmail.com. Please drop me a line if you've achieved an all-time new one, received recognition, or have a DX event that you would like us to mention. I would be happy to do that. If you are enjoying the DX Mentor podcast, please hit the subscribe button. You can also click like if you found this one particularly interesting. If you don't want to subscribe, please drop me a note and let me know. 7-3 for this episode, and thanks to my XYL for her love and support. I'll see you in the pileups.